The CIA is a terrorist organization actively weaponizing itself to spy on Americans. And the origins of COVID-19, we now know them. Welcome to the show. Uncensored, unafraid, and unstoppable. Welcome to the Stu Peters Show. My name is Stu. Well, for 3 years, the only thing even nominally preventing America from being a total open borders nation is Title 42. That's the law that President Trump took advantage of during COVID to enable quick expulsions of foreign arrivals based on the supposed pandemic. This was one of the only positive things that ever came out of the fake COVID-19 pandemic at all. Title 42 has surprisingly stuck around for more than 2 years of Biden, but now it's set to go away. And when it does, it will basically be the end times for our border, and by extension for America as any kind of a coherent, real country. At least with Trump, there were other efforts to curb illegal immigration. There was the wall, greater ICE activity, the Remain in Mexico policy, the travel ban, and so on. Biden has rolled back all of that. No more walls, no more big ICE raids, no more travel ban. Dump Title 42 and add in everything else Biden is doing to intentionally not enforce our border, and there's only one honest way to assess the outcome. America is an open border state, a dumping ground for the worst of the population across the rest of the planet. Michael Yan is a combat correspondent, author, and photographer with a lifetime of experience traveling to the world's most complex, chaotic, and dangerous environments. Thank God he's still alive. He's here with us today. He's worked in no fewer than 89 different countries. Most recently, he's been on the ground in Central America watching the relentless human tide advancing from South America up to America, anticipating the Title 42 repeal. What Michael has found in Central America explodes so many of the lies that are told about our border crisis and who's taking advantage of it. For one, there's the lie that these are just desperate Latin Americans looking for a better life. Michael can see that with his own eyes because obviously a huge number of these migrants are not Latin American. A lot of them are Chinese, some are African, some are Middle Eastern. Michael estimates that 140 different countries have now been represented. The total daily flow is several dozen buses, about 1,500 to 2,000 people every single day. Basically, the secret is out worldwide. Fly to South America, join a convoy going north, then either sneak across the border or just say the right magic words if you meet a U.S. border agent, and ta-da, you get into America and you're never leaving. Sure, they might give you a court date, but who the hell cares? What difference does that make? Just blow it off. Nobody from ICE is going to hunt you down. Local police aren't going to arrest or report you. Even if you literally commit crimes and get caught in a blue state, prosecutors will literally reduce your sentence just to protect you from being deported back abroad. This is serious. And these secrets have now been exposed. Our leaders may lie to us under the empire of lies, but around the world, they're hearing the truth. America's border is totally undefended. Anybody can just walk in and loot the whole country at will. Michael Yan joins us now for more on this. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks, Stu. Thanks for having me on. I'm in Panama. I'll be flying back to Texas tomorrow to watch the invasion continue. There's a reason I'm in Panama. This is an hourglass, you might say. First of all, about 5% of the world trade goes right outside my window here through the Panama Canal. I'm out of the jungle now. I'm back in the city. And also, the whole world is flowing through the Darien Gap. The instantaneous rate is at least 400,000 per year. That's just through the Darien Gap. Actually, I think it's probably more, looks like about 500,000 or 600,000 at the instantaneous rate now. But according to the Panamanian government, it's more than 400,000 a year right now. But that number is just increasing so much, it's hard to keep up with the actual stats. Now, a lot of the people who are coming through are not coming through Darien Gap. For instance, many of the Chinese will fly to Cancun. And they'll fly to Mexico City, Tapachula. They'll go to places like this, and that's where they link up. Sorry, I've been out in the jungle, and five out of six of us got sick. I'm okay. But because my immune system has been tested in India. So but the bottom line is we have huge numbers of people coming across, landing on the Florida beaches. For instance, one Chinese man that we intercepted in the Darien Gap about 3 weeks ago. He had just been detained by the U.S. Coast Guard on March 8th. He was floating up to – he was trying to get to Florida. He had bought a boat in the Bahamas. We know this partly because he told us and partly because we've been able to check his story. So he bought a boat from a Scotsman in the Bahamas, NASA, for $5,000. That's what he said. And he ran out of fuel on the way to Florida. U.S. Coast Guard picked him up. He said, this is true. Coast Guard has confirmed it. It was March 8th. And deported him back to Bahamas. Bahamas was sending this Chinese man back to China. His stopover flight was in Cuba. He then changed his flight to Quito, Ecuador. And from Quito, this is how most of the Chinese get through Darien Gap, by the way. They go to Quito, Ecuador. They take a bus, which takes about 50 hours, about 50 hours. And they go up to Nicocli, Colombia, which I've done, actually. And from Nicocli, you get on a boat to Copacabana. I've done this boat. And then from there, you go through the Darien Gap. And that's where we intercepted him, was in the Darien Gap just as he came out. Talked with him for about an hour and a half. He was itching and tired and hungry and itching from something. I don't know if it was scabies or morungai bugs or whatever. But the bottom line is he leaked a little too much. And he's in Mexico right now. And this guy, he spoke with what we call the official accent. To me, he sounded like he'd been to the language school at Luoyang. Luoyang is the language school where the GS of the PLA trains. That's the general staff of the PLA, the People's Liberation Army. The GS is like their paramilitary sorts. Keep in mind, he was trying to land on a beach in Florida, right? And he ran out of fuel and the Coast Guard picked him up. And now I just got a report from Florida today from a friend of mine at a range. He was literally just at a range. And he saw, we've been to Darien Gap together. We've been many places. The bottom line is he sees mainland Chinese at Florida gun ranges now who don't speak a lick of English, right? I mean, this is not a coincidence. Now, let me talk about Luoyang, the language. There's three major intelligence organizations from the Chinese Communist Party we need to be concerned about. One is PS, that's public security. Those are the ones with the police stations in New York and Dublin and London. And recently I was at the one in Dublin and I was at the one in London. These are police, that's like their FBI. That's like the Chinese Communist Party FBI. That's the public security, the PS. They set up police stations all over the world, right? And they administer Chinese Communist Party law and they also kidnap people as they have done in Thailand and admitted to it, right? So the next is MSS. MSS is the Ministry of State Security. That's like the Chinese Communist Party, CIA, right? That's the MSS, Ministry of State Security. The third one is the GS of the PLA. That's the General Staff of the People's Liberation Army. That's who I think this guy probably worked for because he has what, again, they call the official accent. If you're learning a language, say from Mandarin to English or Mandarin to German or Mandarin to Italian or something, and it's a very different language than your base language, you're going to have a very difficult time learning that new language, that target language, without an accent if you learn it after puberty. You need to learn the language before puberty to really have a clean accent, right? Most people can't jump through that hoop. And so what? There's a fix to that. The fix is you go to like Luoyang. I went to a language school as well. I went to the Defense Language Institute, but we weren't learning to be spies. We were just learning to speak the target language, right? I learned German, right? So he clearly went to some language school. He told me he did not go to Luoyang, and he pretended like he'd never heard of Luoyang, of course, right? And but the bottom line is he knew right when to use words like bro and all this stuff. What you have at Luoyang are, for instance, American teachers, Canadian teachers, this sort of thing. You can sound like you've been in the target country for many, many years, right? This is old spy craft. Even if you have an accent, you can, like, you've been watching Gilligan's Island, you've been watching American baseball and football, you know all the players' names, you know who's the mayor of such and such city. You just know a lot of nuance that you would never know unless you had been in that country for many years or you went to a special language school, a spy program, like at Luoyang, right? So this is quite interesting. We know that the Chinese are sending huge numbers of spies. A lot of these don't have to come through the back door. A lot of them are just at our universities or they have top secret clearances and they work for the NSA, right? We have spies in the CIA. We know this. And our systems are so corrupt that they're just putting up with it. And but then we have these paramilitary sorts who will come through the Darien Gap, who will come through, try to get to Florida, try to get other, you know, try to land without their faces being on the security. Now, this guy, to my knowledge, has not yet passed into the United States. He has not done so over a legal entry point anyway. If he's passed into the United, he messaged me yesterday. He said he's still in Mexico. So let's see. You know, I'll never know if he hits the United States, or maybe we will. Maybe we'll see him, you know, dead on the ground after some hitting a power plant or something. You know, the bottom line is we are being invaded. This is a multifaceted attack. By the way, they're handing out maps. The Red Cross hands out these maps, shows people exactly how to get. This is from the Darien Gap, right? Shows people exactly how to get to the United States. Here, I'll hold up the QR code, and everybody can get this map. You can I'll hold it up long enough. Here, I'll hold it for about 10 seconds so you can screenshot it, and you can see this map. You can see all the phone numbers and Twitter accounts and all this sort of thing. Shows you exactly where to go. And then on the map, on the back of the map, there's another QR code. This is what our taxpayer money is handing out, right? It's handing out these maps and shows exactly how to hop on trains. And actually on the back of this map, it actually mentions, you know, if you're going to get on trains, don't get on the top of trains and do it drunk. Well, you can find this map online, but it actually says don't hop on the outside of trains if you're drunk. They also hand out rape kits. This is actually a pre-rape kit because they know so many women and children get raped going through the Darien Gap. This is the OIM or IOM, depending on your language. This is funded by U.S. taxpayer money. They literally hand out – look what they hand out. They hand out female condoms. This is for going through the Darien Gap. They hand out male condoms. They hand out a nice flashlight, which actually I dropped the other day and it broke, but I put it back together. And they hand out abortion pills, right? So there's four of these in the package. Actually, there's two in this one, and I've got two more in the rape kit. Yeah, so if you get raped, you can go ahead and get an abortion out in the jungle. This is the kind of stuff that U.S. taxpayers are paying for. I call these buses coming up through the Darien Gap tuberculosis. Tuberculosis because multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis is flowing up every day up Highway 1. Let me say, tuberculosis, for those who don't know, is one of the ultimate diseases in all of human history, right? It's up there with smallpox, Black Death. It's up there. Polio is nothing compared to tuberculosis, right? Spanish flu is a child compared to tuberculosis. And we know that many of these people coming into tuberculosis is already over the all over multi-drug resistant tuberculosis is already all over the United States. Red countries for tuberculosis are countries like Afghanistan, Somalia. All these people are coming through. None of them are filtered. None are quarantined. None are medically checked. So they're coming up. Many are itching. Many are coughing. Itching with what? We know that there's a lot of lice out here in the jungle. Now, lice. There's lice all over the United States. We know that. What does lice spread? Lice spreads what's called epidemic typhus. There's three major types of typhus. Let's talk about epidemic typhus. We don't need to worry about scrub typhus. Marine typhus can be of concern, but epidemic typhus can be of major concern. Epidemic typhus is spread by lice. That's why the British, the old term for lice is cooties. That's why we learned to play the cooties game, right? Typhus is also one of these massive, very serious diseases. Now you see the American Pediatric Society, I think that's the name of it, American Pediatric, you can find it online, are now recommending that if children show up in school with lice, don't even send them home. That is absolutely insane. Typhus is actually endemic in California and Texas. And so we haven't had epidemic typhus outbreak in many years because we know what spreads it, lice. We know what causes it, and we know how to treat it. However, the treatments for these come from pharmaceutical plants in China. Yeah, you see where this is going, right? And and the reason that we keep epidemic typhus down and we haven't seen any serious outbreaks in many years is because we stay on top of it. We send children home who have lice, and we send health department to their home and clean up the home so that you don't have a community outbreak, epidemic typhus, right? But that's what we're facing. We're literally facing conditions are being set so that children are not even sent home with that. There's other names for typhus. It's called famine fever. It's also called war fever. It's called clinic fever, hospital fever, ship fever, camp fever. Notice something these all have in common. People with typhus who go to the hospital end up spreading typhus throughout the hospital. We have clear biological warfare going on. We have clear, for instance, down here, we have massive malaria outbreaks here in Panama now and Costa Rica, which have, I mean, it's unbelievable. Some of these strains are clearly not from here, actually. And for instance, Embra Indians, whom I go out with a lot in the Darien Gap in the jungle. I just had dinner recently with Francisco Agape. He's the mayor of 29 of the Embra Indian villages. He said before the migration, he's a friend of mine. I've been out to many of the villages with him. He said before the migration, they had maybe one or two malaria cases per year. And so when an Indian got malaria, everybody said, you know, so-and-so has malaria. But now malaria is just spreading like wild, as is dengue. We know the Chinese Communist Party has been weaponizing dengue. They're open about it. They've also been creating drones, which can spread the mosquitoes, which is Aedes aegypti mosquito. Actually, when you call me on this phone, my ringer is the buzz of the Aedes aegypti mosquito. I pay attention to these things. There's a reason why I spend more than half of my life in these sorts of countries, and I'm still alive, right? I don't get waterborne illnesses because I'm very careful with my water. I'm very careful with mosquitoes. But what can I do against multi-drug resistant tuberculosis? Not a lot, really, except stay away from the people who have it, which are traveling up to the United States by the hundreds of thousands. And in this month alone, when Title 42, who cares about Title 42? It's we already don't have a border. It's gone. I'm on the Texas border often. I'm down in Mexico often. I'm watching this in Europe. I go all over Europe. I see the same thing. Luxembourg now is about 50% migrants. I didn't say 15. I said 50. It's about 50% migrants, right? Now, it's unbelievable. I spent more than 6 years in Europe. The last time I was in Luxembourg before this was when I was in Special Forces. We were doing training there and whatnot. Luxembourg was the jewel of Europe. It's the place where you could take your kids and let them play on the streets at 2 a.m. It didn't matter. Nothing's going to happen. It's perfectly safe, right? Not now. Last time I went there, less than a year ago, I saw probably about a dozen fights in about 10 days or so. It was every day we're seeing fights on the streets, people defecating on the streets in downtown Luxembourg City, jewel of Europe, people doing drugs in the open. I made video of this outside of my hotel room in downtown Luxembourg City. A migrant broke into a car right outside my window. I was making videotapes, making video at night right outside my window of African drug gangs doing drug deals right on the corners. I mean, it was right there at my hotel. I mean, this is unbelievable. Europe is being destroyed. I see the same with Japan. I was just over in Japan. I was on Ishigaki Island meeting with the mayor there. Ishigaki is near Taiwan, right? This weaponization of migration is not just the United States. Japan is being set up for this as well. A problem that Japan has, by the way, I've written 3 books on information war. Unfortunately, they're all in Japanese language. They're not in English because I've been working for years to wake up the Japanese. The Japanese import 80 to 90% of their food and energy, right? 80 to 90%. Japan is completely set up for epic famine. Japan has had famines throughout its history. Only in the recent few generations since World War II haven't been any famines since World War II. But before that, in the last about 1,500 years, there were about 500 mentions of famine in Japan. Now, these aren't all massive famines. Some are small famines on small islands and that sort of thing. But the point is, for instance, Ishigaki Island. If something happens to Taiwan, Ishigaki is near Taiwan. It's near Senkaku, right? If something happens in Taiwan and the seas are closed around Japan in particular, and as a whole, they're going to run out of food very quickly. Like on Ishigaki, their main crop is sugarcane. What are you going to do with sugarcane? You know, get sugar shock? And so the 60,000 people on Ishigaki, the mayor said, we're going to have to evacuate them. And then what's going to happen? The fishing boats are going to come from Taiwan, and they're going to take all the homes of my people on Ishigaki Island, right? And so Ishigaki Island is part of Okinawa Prefecture, right? What I'm getting to is, this is the same story I see all over the world. I spend a lot of time in Netherlands, because Netherlands is another big target of Chinese Communist Party and the World Economic Forum. And there's a reason for that. that the World Economic Forum and the Chinese Communist Party are working to take the farmland from the farmers in Netherlands.
That's right, yeah.
Why? Go ahead, sir.
It's the most fertile ground that we have. They're the number one producer, despite being one of the smallest countries that exports.
It's more than that. The World Economic Forum is working to make Tri-State City, a three-state city. It will include most of Netherlands, part of Germany, and part of Belgium. Those are the tri-states, right? So the farmers in Netherlands own approximately 62% of the land. Well, that is going down by the hour. And Tri-State City is slated to be a big, smart city with about 30 million people. It contains Rotterdam Harbor, the biggest harbor in Europe, and Antwerp Harbor, just south of Rotterdam, the second biggest harbor in Europe. Second and first biggest harbors in Europe, right there, right? Rotterdam and Antwerp, they're in Tri-State City. Rotterdam Harbor is at the terminus of the railway that goes all the way to Shanghai. It goes all Chinese railway that they've built all the way across Asia, goes, you know, feeds all various places in China like Chengdu and whatnot, and feeds all the way across Asia and goes right to Rotterdam. So there's a reason I spend so much time in Netherlands. Any place I'm at, like I'm in Panama right now, Panama Canal is right outside my window. China is making a concerted effort to take Panama. They're working on it very hard, right? Any place I'm at, Japan, Netherlands, here in Panama, or soon back in Texas, these are places to watch. Some of my friends said, oh, you're moving to Texas. That's great. And I said, no, it's not. If I'm moving to a place near you, you should probably be leaving. Texas is clearly going to be a battleground. It already is. Look what's happened in the last week there in Texas. It's only going to get worse. We are in a state of war. The United States is being destroyed. It's being destroyed biologically. It's being destroyed demographically. We see the dollar is collapsing. I'm telling you, the world. I've been warning about this for 3 years straight now. Conditions are being set for global famine, which will create huge amounts of hop. Hop is human osmotic pressure. Human osmotic pressure is the push and the pull of migration. The World Economic Forum is crystal clear what they're doing. They don't hide it. They don't mince words. They're not a wolf in sheep's clothing. They are a wolf dressed as a pack of wolves. They are telling you what they're going to do, right? Right now, for instance, nitrogenous fertilizers. I've been warning about this. Here, I was on Jordan Peterson's show. I had him over in Netherlands, actually. Took him out to a farm, set up some meetings for him there to warn Jordan about this nitrogenous fertilizer issues. Right here in Panama, we have shortages of nitrogenous fertilizers now. So many of the smaller farmers are already going out of business this year, right? I just hired two people to go out to villages and check, you know, food issues around Panama while I do it down in Darien, right? Here's the thing. As these nitrogenous fertilizers, there's not enough. For instance, Brazil doesn't have enough now. India does not have enough. Thailand. I went over to Thailand recently and met with an old friend of mine, former prime minister of Thailand, Abhisit. And we were having coffee. And I said, Mark, his nickname is Mark. I just left Ireland. And Ireland thinks that they have food security. I was with Mary Lou McDonald, the Sinn Féin leader there. She's got an IQ of about 90, right? Mary Lou, all she wants to talk about is equity and equality, not food security. And I told Mark, I said, I just left Ireland. They think they've got plenty of food. They don't calculate their inputs of energy and nitrogenous fertilizers and whatnot, right? Mm. Sorry, Stu. And so I flew over to Thailand. I said, Mark, I know Thailand. I mean, I have an office in Thailand. I know Thailand exports a massive amount of food. He goes, yeah, as you know, right? I didn't fly all the way to Thailand and ask you to coffee to chit chat. Thailand is one country that I believe in the future can have massive food shortages, even though now it is a massive food exporter. Why? For instance, India is having a fertilizer problem. I've already reconned the route from India through Bangladesh, through Myanmar, straight shot to Thailand, right? When they have food problems, they're coming to you. That's one issue, not to mention the other neighbors, right? Secondly, your biggest food export is, of course, rice. What are you exporting when you export rice? Nitrogen. The rice sucks the nitrogen out like crazy. Thailand's soil is poor in nitrogen, right? You only create 8% of your nitrogenous fertilizers. You import 92% of your nitrogenous fertilizers. your sources are drying up. He's like, we'll get it from China. I'm like, no, you won't. If you could get it from China, I wouldn't be sitting here having coffee with you. I'm warning you. You need to look like King Rama the Ninth did in the 1960s and start preparing for different days ahead for Thailand. One of the paradoxes of a famine, by the way, is that often the worst famines happen where there's the most food. You know, I hear people in the United States say, I'm surrounded by corn. What are you going to do? Eat corn for the rest of your life? And secondly, you have to take into account the inputs that come in to make that. You're not going to eat corn for the rest of your life, for starters. And secondly, for instance, there's a lot of more in the famine in Ukraine in the 32, 33, and there were actually other famines. Ukraine's one of the most serious food producers in the world, or Henan province over in China during Mao's famine. That's one of the best, one of the biggest food baskets of China had some of the worst famine. Likewise, Ireland, endemic famines there. Why? They're surrounded by fish, right? I mean, yet they still have had severe famines. Part of that's because of the English. We know that. It's also partly, I know the Irish love to blame the English, and there's a lot of blame for that, but the Irish also were doing it to themselves. You could go up to Belfast now. I was in Belfast recently. They've got more, you wouldn't believe it. They've got over 20 miles of walls between Catholics and Protestants. It's like Sunni Shia. These walls are so big, you'd have to be a professional baseball player with the sling of David to get a stone over the top. I mean, and they close the gates every night. There is no peace in Europe at this time. It's an illusion. I've lived more than 6 years in Europe. We see these food shortages and these weaponized migrations that are occurring are going to lead to massive civil wars. Anyway, I can go on for hours, Stu.
Yeah, I'm just telling you, you are just a wealth of information, and we got to have you back. Obviously, we're way over time. We've blown through two commercial breaks here. We got to pay the bills. But you said something that was very interesting. We're under a biological warfare attack right now. This is being perpetuated at the hands of your own fake government, a corporate crime syndicate that's completely out of control. We're being invaded by military-aged people. Weapons caches and dirty bombs and spies, no doubt, are scattered all throughout the interior of this country right now. You don't have to be in Texas or Arizona or some border state right now to be impacted by this. These people are showing up everywhere. They're hiding out. They're intentionally being paid to go to the interior of this country and cause havoc and destruction as part of the downfall of this country right now. The United States Congress has wartime authority. They can declare war. We have a Republican-led Congress majority. Why are they sitting on their hands and not mentioning any of this? The biological warfare attacks, the invasion that's happening at the border. They have the power right now, the purse strings to stop what's going on in Ukraine and militarize our own borders, completely lock them down, shut them down right now, declare an immigration moratorium permanently. Otherwise, it's going to be Americans seeking asylum elsewhere. That's what's going to happen. And where will they go?
Oh, I see Americans. Yeah, the Americans ask me every single day, Stu, where should I go? You know, as somebody who spends most of my life downrange, of course, I don't know how to answer that because I don't know your economic status. I don't know your capabilities. I don't know, you know, what languages you speak, you know, and where would you go? I mean, where? Panama? I see a lot of Americans coming to Panama. I say, that's ridiculous. Why would you come to Panama? I love Panama. It's a nice place. But China is making a strong go for Panama as well.
Yeah. Is the picture clear for everyone? Does everybody get it? Your government is a murderous regime that is allowing your country intentionally to be subverted and overtaken by communists that will kill you and your kids. This is not hyperbolic. This is not an exaggeration. And until we have a president with balls, until we have a Congress that'll actually do something, until we have a government that's representative of the people, because just like you said, another illusion, here's a good illusion for you. How about a two-party representative system of government? That is an illusion. Elections are an illusion. Democracy is fake. A constitutional republic no longer exists. All of this is true. We're out of time. Michael Yon, thank you. Please come back soon.
Thank you, Stu. We need more time.
Look around at what's going on right now. Banks are collapsing all over the place, and then they're getting bailed out. And who's paying for that? You are. They say taxpayers won't pay. They say that other banks will pay. Well, how do those banks get that money? They'll probably raise your bank fees like they always do. And if the Fed steps in, you'll likely also be paying an inflation tax. In times like this, storing all of your money in a bank may be very risky, as we have seen. So what can two average Joes like you and I even do about it? Protect your wealth with gold and silver, just like so many other Americans and banks are doing right now. Call 855-706-GOLD to learn how to protect your savings with gold and silver. Call Gold Co. today, 855-706-GOLD.
For the first time in a millennia, a famine of biblical proportion is hitting the earth, and it's by design. War has created scarcity. Fertilizer production has been wiped out.
The price of fertilizer is up 128%.
Food processing plants are exploding. Herds of cows are being massacred and buried.
This is a very abnormal event.
The Great Reset demons have created the crisis, but a generation of great resistors following King Jesus have the solution.
HeavensHarvest.com. Get there right now.
Prepare for the worst by trusting the best. HeavensHarvest.com has a delicious plan to conquer starvation. It's real food, high quality, tastes great.
It's actually really good.
Trust Heaven's Harvest today. Order food for the year and a bucket of heirloom seeds. Affordable, available, ready for the fight ahead. HeavensHarvest.com.
FilterSuck.com is the leading manufacturer in filterless air purification systems, whether you're dealing with pollen or mold or dust, shedding from your pet, or vaccinated neighbors, mRNA spike protein shedding. FilterSuck.com has solutions for every scenario, at home, at work, or on the go. Breathe with confidence. Don't let your air suck. Rest well knowing that your home is protected 24/7, so now you can get a unit for your home or a portable unit for on-the-go travel. That's FilterSuck.com. Use promo code STU for 10% off when you go to FilterSuck.com. So here's a billion-dollar question with an answer worth trillions. Because that answer literally means life and death for every single living and breathing human on the face of the planet. How old exactly is COVID? Now, this is a question that's caused a lot of debate because the answer to that question tells us the truth about the real origins of the pandemic. Did COVID really first appear in Wuhan, China last winter after it presumably escaped by accident from a lab there? Was it Fort Detrick? University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Was it circulating months before Wuhan, China, in other countries like China likes to argue because it suggests the illness came from somewhere else? Or is it even older than that? Perhaps far older. That's the case being made right now by Dr. David Martin. He recently appeared at the European Parliament's International COVID Summit. During that event, Dr. David Martin said that COVID obviously did not begin overnight 3 years ago. No, instead, he declared that the model of the pathogen that would become SARS-CoV-2, that is COVID-19, was first described all the way back in 1965. And it was described with symptoms matching the common cold, not some society-obliterating superdisease. Dr. Martin says subsequent history demonstrates that this virus was modified repeatedly over and over again to change it, to make it deadlier. And that supposed vaccine work occurred alongside these modifications all along. Yeah, according to Dr. Martin, there was no Operation Warp Speed. These mRNA shots, he said, were in the works long before 2020. All of this, he says, shows that COVID's ultimate origins are right here with our own elite in the United States, not in China, and definitely not due to some sick pangolin in a wet market. Dr. David Martin joins us now to lay out his timeline in even more detail. Dr. Martin, thank you so much for coming. We appreciate you being here.
Stu, it's an honor. I always love seeing you.
Love seeing you as well. So, I mean, you've been right all along, and now the proof is in the pudding. As a matter of fact, this has been translated in Google Translate, but I'll just say the Russian ministry, their military, has launched an investigation. This is just breaking today. Quote, thus, former U.S. President Barack Obama in 2005 entered into partnership agreements with Ukraine on the start of the implementation of military biological programs in that country. In turn, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton initiated the adoption of the American strategy to counter biological threats and contributed to the legalization of dual use research. What does that mean to you exactly?
Well, what it means is that the timing is spot on. The Russians are correct in stating that in 2005, after, as you pointed out, several years of development, in 2005, the United States government, under DARPA and other funding sources, commenced what they called a technology platform in biological weapons, specifically using coronavirus as what they called their technology platform for bioweapons. So I don't know how many people need to interpret that. That's not left for a lot of ambiguity. If you say that it's technology for a bioweapons program, you have a conference to that effect, and then you start funding without competitive grants those initiatives across the country and around the world, it feels to me like that's not an allegation, that's an admission. And we need to be really clear on the fact that this thing, as you pointed out in the intro, is not something that came upon us overnight. This has been a cross-Atlantic collaboration that began when the model was first described in 1965. And by 1966, going into 1967, the United States and Great Britain started collaborating with taking the pathogens and moving them across the Atlantic, infecting people in Britain with U.S. coronavirus as early as 1966, which was published, as I pointed out in my presentation to the European Union Parliament, in 1967. So this has been around, ironically, for 56 years, Stu. That doesn't sound like warp speed. That sounds like molasses in February.
So then what was warp speed? Some CIA operation?
Well, warp speed was a convenient way to move the liability for ultimately what will be the civil and criminal liability for injuries and deaths into a bankruptable corporation. This is an old trick that pharmaceutical companies have played for years, which is they set up a shell company, and that shell company ultimately is the means through which something gets distributed. But when liability falls back on somebody, and by the way, this is not my allegation. The Defense Department sought two, not one, but two legal opinions back in the spring of 2020 on whether or not the Department of Defense was going to be liable for injuries and deaths associated with the medical countermeasures. And it was the U.S. Department of Justice and the Department of Defense who had JAG reviews to suggest that they could put enough buffers using these shell corporations, ATI and ANSWER and others, between the pharmaceutical companies and the Department of Defense, so that if anybody is ever found to be liable, which they will be, they can simply bankrupt the companies and put them away. This was a shell game to make sure liability never had the financial might of either Moderna or Pfizer on the back end of judgments made. So this was premeditated all the way through.
Yeah. To your point, congressional immunity that was granted to big pharma companies for these vaccines is a major psyop. That's fake. They don't have immunity from deploying a weapon of biowarfare, a biological agent. So who are the bad actors? Okay, it's not reasonable to just assert that every doctor in this country is inherently evil, that everybody in our government knew what was being ushered in here. A lot of us were surprised. Nobody knew what the hell was going on in China. We heard of this novel coronavirus. We were all scared to death. They scared the hell out of everybody. Locked them down, of course. Trump locked down the country, rolled out these shots, said that they were a countermeasure, safe and effective. They're still doing it. They're still doing it today. Now more knowingly, of course. But who are the bad actors at the beginning of all this that knew that this was coming, what they were doing?
Well, so we need to go back to 1992, and you heard the date right, 1992. That's when Ralph Baric and his team at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, figured out that they could take this model that they were calling coronavirus, and they could figure out ways to modify it so it could target different tissue. 1992, they took something that was predominantly known to be, as you indicated, a common cold-associated pathogen, and they decided to make it target the heart tissue in specifically the rabbit model. Now, the reason why that's important, and that was published in 1992, the reason why that was important is because during that period of time, NIAID had commenced its program of trying to find what they called a universal vaccine platform. In other words, they wanted to figure out a way to get everybody permanently addicted to being injected. And that was for HIV, that was for the contrived bird flus and all the kinds of things we heard about. And it was the work that was done in 1992, published in the Journal of Infectious Diseases in 1992, where they actually succeeded in figuring out how to take a model derived from what they had described as coronavirus and turn it not into a virus or a pathogen, but into a technology into which they could insert other nucleic acid sequences to try to achieve what was allegedly back then vaccination. But as you pointed out, this was never about vaccination in the legal sense of the word. Vaccination specifically is defined in 1986 as a disruption of infection or transmission. This was gene therapy. This was taking a pathogen model, inserting instructions to make other toxins, and making sure those get injected into human beings for the purpose of genetic modification. That's what this was about. And that formal program funded and commenced officially with that cardiomyopathy study in 1992.
And then combine that with the transhumanist agenda. Right. Because Moderna's own website says that these shots are a software program.
That's correct. And remember that Moderna itself, from 2000 to 2010, was a National Science Foundation project called Darwinian Chemical Systems. And Stu, we need to unpack what that means. Darwinian Chemical Systems, 2000 to 2010. During that 10-year period of time, prior to the formation of the company itself, during that decade, what they figured out was how to take mRNA instructions and get those mRNA instructions to write into the genome. And the reason why Moderna was spun out in 2010 is they had succeeded. They had figured out a way to get mRNA to actually write into the genome. Despite all the allegations that have been made about medical countermeasures, this was never about anything other than an experimental gene therapy to modify humans into a dependency for pharmaceutical companies.
Not a military medical countermeasure.
No, it's not. It's gene therapy. April 2020, and people need to go back and read this. I've been accused many times of coming up with this on my own. But April 2020, the SEC filings of both Moderna and BioNTech both state in their filings that this is an experimental gene therapy device. This is not regulated as a biologic agent. This is not regulated as a vaccine or a drug. It's regulated as a gene therapy, specifically an experimental gene therapy. And people have to realize that when we take an experimental gene therapy and we put it into any system, and by the way, they didn't start with animals, they started with people. They started experimenting on people, and they decided to do that because they were allegedly shielded under a misinterpretation of the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act and allegedly under the PrEP Act. But here's the stinking little problem for everybody. Under both the 1986 Act and the PrEP Act, experimental gene therapies are never authorized. Furthermore, under 21 Code of Federal Regulations, Section 50.22-23, there is a specific exclusion for forcing or coercing a population into taking in any activity inside of a clinical trial if that information does not first include informed consent. Now, Stu, you know, you cannot have informed consent on something that has never, never been introduced to any living system, far less humans, right? We don't have informed consent. So there was no way that any of the standards that are required to achieve the status of a protected medical countermeasure, none of those standards were met. There was no independent investigation review board. There was no financially independent ethics review. There was no review of anything else. This was all coercion to get the public to accept a medical countermeasure under the guise of a vaccine, which in fact was not either. It was a genetic modification of humanity.
And they knew the whole time. And so how big of a story actually is this? I mean, so explain to the people that are sitting at their dinner tables watching this and tell them how big this actually is, what this actually means. What is COVID-19? Where did it come from? Was it a mistake? Was it a leak? Was it a bioweapon? Was it deployed intentionally?
So let's start with COVID-19. COVID-19 was a branding campaign, and it was announced as such. COVID-19 was selected by the World Health Organization to be the marketing label for the thing that they were going to call a novel disease. Tiny problem, it was not a novel disease. It was influenza-like illness, which had been defined ever since 1973. And you heard that date correctly. 1973, which is when the symptoms associated with COVID-19 were described. And they were described in the publication Chest in 1973 by the McIntosh study. So we've known what the symptoms were since 1973. Does that sound like a novel disease in the spring of 2020?
Something we've never heard of in 2020.
COVID-19 was influenza-like illness, and it's been known for decades. Now, what's the implications? It's very simple. The implications are we have decided to allow the population, and by that I mean billions of people, to be injected with an experimental gene therapy and to be injected with known chemical pathogens, including the lipid nanoparticle, including the pseudouridine, which is a modified nucleic acid sequence. We know that all of those things are pro-cancerous. We know they are pro-cardiovascular inflammation. We know that they are pro-clotting in many instances. And what we know is that has been injected into the human population with absolutely no safety data whatsoever. Safe and effective? Not a chance. And here's where we have the real problems, Stu. There's an enormous number of people who are promoting that they can somehow fix the problem. You can detox this. You can do a therapy here, or you can take a supplement there, and somehow or another you can detox it. Here's the problem. When we go into a situation where we introduce RNA into the human body, we have no idea all of the locations it goes. We do not know how it is, in fact, interacting with the existing genetic structures of the human body. We don't have any information about that. So the idea that we can go and potentially remove the spike protein, or we can go and remove something else, may be a possibility, but we don't know. And by the way, when I say we don't know, I mean no one knows the full breadth of what modifications have actually been done. We don't know how the body has responded. And so many of the pro-oncologic effects, many of the pro-inflammatory effects with respect to the cardiovascular system are unknown. And if we pretend to think that we can actually introduce gene therapy and, oops, accidentally get rid of it overnight, we're fooling ourselves. And we knew that in 2018. This is super important for people to understand. By 2018, between 2016 and 2018, every study that was done by Ralph Baric on the coronavirus, every single one of those studies said that vaccines were not effective against it, and modifying the organism after exposure was something that they had been unsuccessful in doing. So they knew that by 2018. None of this is a surprise.
What is the end game for these people with these shots?
Well, there's no question the end game, if you listen to the most recent statements by the Gates Foundation and by Chelsea Clinton, who just came out in the end of April, lamenting the fact that the world was somehow deficient on taking vaccines at the level of uptake they need. And so she has this catch-up program that she's doing between the Clinton Foundation and the Gates Foundation.
Which, by the way, is forced vaccinations for children.
Which is, in fact, forced vaccinations on children. And remember, vaccination, we're using a term that we need to be careful about. There are still circulating vaccinations. That is, in fact, the case. But when Chelsea Clinton gets up and says that children are not adequately vaccinated, she's not calling everything a vaccine that is, in fact, not a gene therapy or another form of therapy. In fact, a lot of what she's recommending are things that do nothing to stop infection or transmission. There is a plethora of things now marketed as vaccines that are not. And until the 1986 Act is changed under federal law, no redefinition of what a vaccine is or isn't is actually a legally binding definition change. CDC can do all it wants. Yeah, FDA can do all it wants. Those are administrative processes. The law says that a vaccine is infection or transmission interrupting. And if those two standards are not met, it is a gene therapy and it is a clinical intervention. It is not a public health measure. And as such, the public should not engage them.
Do we need to take Yuval Noah Harari seriously and Klaus Schwab seriously when they say that they can control these people with nanotechnology and that they can transform the human species into gods?
Well, the good news is that I think that Yuval Harari and Klaus Schwab and the entire New World Order structure is in fact in all likelihood going to make a god in their own image and is going to suffer the effects thereof. The fact of the matter is, if we as a human race do not see ourselves as absolutely, amazingly, wonderfully, mysteriously, and absolutely spectacularly made, and we see ourselves as nothing more than these robots that do nothing but walk to work in the morning and walk home every night and consume what we're told to consume. If that's the way we see ourselves, then we already have lost what it means to be human. The fact of the matter is they'll automate that. But what they won't automate, Stu, is they won't automate the soul that invigorates you and that invigorates me. They will not automate that. They will not replace that. And they won't trans anything that. What they will do is they will seek to eradicate it. And remarkably for them, they'll fail. Like every other technical intervention where we've decided to make an idol our deity, every single one of those efforts has failed. And this one will fail too.
What is the next step in the process for accountability, which is the ball that we need to be moving forward? That's the conversation that we need to be having.
Well, quite surprisingly, and I must say it was something that I received with wonderful open arms, Ken Paxton in Texas has finally taken the first step in starting an inquiry into the racketeering. He's the first attorney general in the United States to actually commence an inquiry into the deceptive medical practices piece of this puzzle. What that information, if it's done correctly, will do is it will unveil the fact that this plan was long time in the making. This was an information treasure trove, if the discovery is done correctly, where we're going to actually find the memorandums that actually show that this was something that Pfizer was aware of since 1990, as I pointed out in my European Union address, that Moderna was involved in all of this since 2010, and specifically that all of them were alerted to the fact that it was going to be allegedly a respiratory pathogen, allegedly in late 2018 or early 2019, which was going to be the basis for a universal vaccine rollout that would be completed by September 2020. All their words, all their documentation, not my allegations. Every one of those things is taken together to realize that what we have now is we have a situation where, as Ken and other AGs begin this inquiry, we are going to start seeing the depth of programming, the depth of preparation that precedes this, not by months and weeks, but by years. And as I've said many times, once we get to the real discovery, which is the illegal transfer of a known pathogen model derived from a known natural pathogen model in 2002, we are going to find that the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill's infectious replication defective clone patent, which they filed in 2002 prior to the advent of SARS 1.0, we are going to find that that entire campaign branded as SARS was nothing more than a fear tactic to get the public to accept a gene-altering gene therapy. And that's what this whole thing has been about since 2002. And ladies and gentlemen, if you ever forget that, remember, they told us they were doing it. In 2015, they said the public needed to accept a medical countermeasure, such as a pan-coronavirus vaccine, that the media would create the hype and the economics would follow that hype. And once again, remember, they said, we need to use that hype to our advantage. Investors will follow if they see profit at the end of the process. This was about harming humanity for economic gain. That's what it was about, beginning to end. And Ken's efforts are the first AG in the country who's actually going to uncover this information in a legislative and or judicial process, which may give us a shot at prosecuting for accountability. We'll see where it goes, but I'm hopeful, based on his first opening salvo, that he may be onto this now.
What reason would we have to not believe the criminals who are carrying out a mass level kill off like we have never seen before? The words that Dr. Martin was reciting there were the words of Peter Daszak, who made that admission openly. that's what they were doing, planning this, to harm humanity, to kill humanity for the purpose of profit, power, and control. David Martin, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Always good, Stu. Thank you so much.
Still really just in the beginning of it is the scientific revolution. Humankind gains immense new powers, such big powers that you can say they might really transform us, not only from just apes into the rulers of the planet, they might transform us into God.
I think it's important to understand that we are in the middle of World War III. In the very near future, you're going to start hearing this new term, directed evolution.
Directed evolution.
Directed evolution.
Moderna says on their website that the mRNA are software programs. They can be pre-programmed or they can be programmed from outside sources. Nobody was told they were injected with electromagnetic devices.
Imagine a biological computer that operates inside a living cell.
When I read through the patents for the mRNA technology vaccines, they did not read as a vaccine. They read as a bioweapon.
The difference of this forced industrial revolution is it doesn't change what you are doing.
Shall we play a game?
It changes you.
Who masters those technologies will be the master of the world.
When all of this COVID tyranny began, one man saw early on what would happen if people didn't stand up for their God-given rights. Supporter and sponsor of this show, Christopher Key, took the school boards to demand that our kids be unmasked and free. He's leading the charge to take America back. He confronts corrupt corporations and fraud pharmacists through peaceful protests, providing supplements like IGF-1 and his pain and energy chips, and mobilizing activism to take down tyranny. Visit vaccine-police.com to stay informed on upcoming activism and products to keep your loved ones safe.
One of Dr.
That's vaccine-police.com. Again, vaccine-police.com.
Finally here. This flu season could be one of the worst in decades, and pharmacies are running out of ways to fight it. Instead of relying on them, arm yourself with Z-Flu. Z-Flu uses high-quality elderberry paired with vitamin C, D, and zinc to keep your immune system at its strongest. Trust the name that kept you safe during the plandemic and protect yourself this flu season. Buy Z-Flu today at ZStackProtocol.com.
As someone who goes to battle every day with the demonic deep state, as someone who's constantly researching and trying to get information to you, booking interviews, scheduling huge projects like documentaries like Died Suddenly, obviously, energy is an issue. Sometimes you have no afternoon energy. Sometimes your mood is affected. So I started taking Newtopia. I felt a noticeable improvement in my ability to focus and or remember important things once I started using Newtopia. I noticed a boost in my cognitive performance, my energy levels, my mood. Since I began taking Newtopia, I've been able to power through challenging tasks and distractions and manage more projects than ever without rising stress levels, which is incredibly important in current times. Since incorporating Newtopia into my routine, I articulate my thoughts more clearly. So why is Newtopia the best? They have developed a highly effective nootropics specifically designed to unlock your brain's maximum focus and concentration and creativity. Personalize your pack for your unique neurochemistry, choosing from 9 breakthrough brain formulas designed to help with a range of mental and emotional issues. Go to Newtopia.com/Stu Peters. Again, Newtopia.com/Stu Peters. If you want big discounts, use promo code Stu Peters when you go to Newtopia.com/Stu Peters. Welcome back. John Kiriakou is a former CIA officer and investigator for the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He dedicated 14 years of his life to the CIA until that agency's behavior forced him to become a whistleblower instead. John was actually the first CIA whistleblower to report the agency was torturing detainees with waterboarding. So for that, he was prosecuted and imprisoned under U.S. anti-espionage laws, even though he was a whistleblower, not a spy. So thanks to that, John is the only person to have been punished in any way for the CIA's illegal clandestine torture program, for exposing it rather than for participating in it. Well, John is one against a free man, and he remains a fearless truth teller, thank God. He doesn't just reveal the wrongdoings of the CIA, but also the flagrant spying operations that go on in this country on behalf of other countries. For starters, our supposed ally of Israel. Israel's Mossad is one of the most sophisticated and most successful spying operations on the planet, and that includes right here in the United States. According to John, there's evidence of literally nearly 200 Israeli spies and intelligence operatives working in America as we speak right now. They do it, he says, working as undeclared officers who burrow their way into the American academic and defense contracting worlds. And you won't be surprised to learn that, yes, John thinks that when he was alive, Jeffrey Epstein was definitely one of those operatives. Epstein may have had one of the most important and sophisticated roles. He says that Epstein's entire life fits the exact template of a man who's secretly an intelligence asset, and specifically one linked to Mossad. You see, spies try to burrow into networks and organizations, and Epstein was a master burrower. He made friends with CEOs and top scientists, top politicians, presidents, and elite Harvard academics. That was his entire shtick. Meet with as many people of influence as possible, and it seems, get dirt on as many people as possible. Then hold it over their heads, get them what you want them to do via the inflation of bribery and blackmail material. For example, pictures of influential people with underage children doing horrific things. Just a few days ago, we got an extra glimpse of how far-reaching Epstein's efforts actually went. Thanks to the Wall Street Journal, which published Epstein's personal schedule, we've learned that back in 2014, our now current CIA director, William Burns, had no less than 3 meetings with Epstein. All the pieces are there. We just need to pay enough attention to see them, and we need to care enough to actually react and do something about it. John Kiriakou is here with us now, sir. Thank you so much for coming. We appreciate you being here.
Stu, thanks so much for the invitation. I appreciate it very much.
Of course. So in intel circles, there's been open conjecture around the idea that Epstein was essentially flipped by the U.S. government after his initial arrest back before 2010. That hypothesis, of course, just throws more questions up, like, what does it mean to be a foreign agent representing Israel in the United States? And if one is flipped from Israeli intel or Mossad to being an American intel asset, does it really even change anything? In other words, does our Pentagon essentially work for Tel Aviv, or is it the other way around?
Well, Tel Aviv certainly would love it if that were the case. You know, the truth of the matter is, we've got a very complicated relationship with Israel in that we have offered for many decades, we've offered the Israelis essentially unfettered political support, unquestioning unfettered political support. But then the other side of that is that the Israelis just simply have never trusted that we would give them everything that we believe they need to remain safe and secure in a very dangerous neighborhood. And so they've spied on us virtually since the creation of the State of Israel. When I first joined the CIA in January of 1990, one of the very first things that I learned was that the Israelis had 2 declared officers working here in the United States, one representative from Mossad and one representative from Shin Bet, but that there were 200 undeclared officers that the FBI had been able to identify working against us all across America, in defense contractors, in universities, in think tanks. And their job was to develop whatever information they could, whether it was classified or unclassified, and send it back to Israel. And that way, Mossad analysts could determine if the United States was actually giving Israel everything that it said it was giving Israel.
Go
right ahead.
No, I really want to hear you finish that.
Well, the Israelis, for example, I'm going to use the F-35 as an example. The Israelis were the first foreign country that we decided to sell or give the F-35 to. And they didn't want just the F-35. They wanted the F-35 with an avionics package that nobody else on the planet could have. They wanted the U.S. avionics package. And so we said, well, we're going to give you something called the F-35I, with I standing for Israel. We also had the F-35E. With E standing for United Arab Emirates. They didn't want the I or the E. They wanted the same F-35 that we had for ourselves. And so the way they confirm that they have the best is by infiltrating the U.S. military, infiltrating Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman and anyone else who has anything to do with the production of the F-35, to steal those secrets and to assure themselves that they have everything that we have. That's just how they do business.
And we know this and we don't stop them.
No, because that's a political question. Is it worth taking on the Israelis in public? What are American Jewish voters going to think about this? Right? Because both parties, both of the two major parties, are constantly trying to ingratiate themselves with Jewish voters. So do you really want to take on the Israelis? Or do you want to just pretend that everything's fine and hope for the best?
Boils down to, are we a Christian country or not? Are we going to stand on the bedrock that we are a Christian country or not? Let's talk about Epstein a little bit more. He was only reported to have had three passports on him when he was arrested, I believe, France, Saudi Arabia, and the United States. So it seems glaringly obvious that he would have had an Israeli passport, especially given his brother Mark's connections with Humpty Dumpty and that group's deep ties into Israel. So how desperate is the mainstream media to cover up the massive impact that Israel exerts on United States domestic and foreign policy?
I think it's very desperate. And I think it goes just beyond the mainstream media. I think it goes to, again, both political parties here. Because you look at this Wall Street Journal report that you cited from last week, and you look at the people that were involved with Epstein, everybody from CIA Director Bill Burns to Donald Trump and Bill Clinton and Prince Andrew and Alan Dershowitz, and party meant nothing to Jeffrey Epstein. And this is one of the things that sort of tipped me off to the notion that this was an Israeli counterintelligence operation. I believe from the very beginning that the Israelis were behind Jeffrey Epstein, because when I was at the CIA and they taught us about access agents and the importance of having a good access agent, this ticked all the boxes. For example, if you want to spy on, if you're a foreign country and you want to spy on the top policymakers in the United States, well, you can't recruit somebody in Bill Clinton's office and somebody in Donald Trump's office and somebody in Bill Burns's office. You can't do that. It's just too cumbersome. It's too onerous, and you're not going to be able to identify people with enough vulnerabilities to allow themselves to be recruited by you. So what you do is you recruit an access agent. You recruit somebody who has access to all these people, but doesn't necessarily work for them. So what you do is you maybe finance somebody like Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein was kind of a pervert. He was a convicted sex offender. He liked underage girls, but he was also very, very well connected with the most powerful people in the country. And so you have Jeffrey Epstein invite Bill Clinton to his private island, or Donald Trump, or Alan Dershowitz. And you engage them in conversation while they're getting a massage from a 15 or 16-year-old girl. And you get them to open up, because after all, this is just between friends. And then you report everything back to the Mossad. And then it's the Mossad guaranteeing the lifestyle to which you've become accustomed. That way, everybody's happy. Epstein's happy. People who have enjoyed his hospitality on his private island are happy. And the Israelis are happy.
Yeah, the only people that are not are the American people. How many operations against the American people has the CIA seeded with foreign intelligence agencies or members of Five Eyes or, you know, other groups for the express purpose of deploying those operations against the American public?
That is a great question. And I think that it's a question that we will never know the answer to. There's well-documented evidence, for example, that the United States, specifically the CIA and the FBI, have gone to Five Eyes countries and asked them to spy on Americans on behalf of the FBI because the FBI was unable to get a warrant. So listen, if the FBI wants to spy on you, for example, but they don't have probable cause, all they have to do is go to the British or the Canadians or the Australians or the New Zealanders and say, listen, we want you to spy on Stu Peters. We want you to intercept his phone. And then just give us a transcript of everything that you find. Well, they don't need to go to a court for that kind of permission. That's a normal liaison relationship. But it sort of violates the spirit of the law in that you're not supposed to spy on American citizens.
Yeah, isn't the whole point of the CIA to operate on foreign soil?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
The whole point of the CIA is to operate on foreign soil. That was the idea. So if so, why on earth is the CIA laundering their dirty plans for totalitarian control of the planet through foreign countries which are hostile to America for the express purpose of boomeranging those operations? For example, COVID and warp speed back onto U.S. soil.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, there's this wonderful show that's been on Netflix called Narcos. And in the first two seasons, the lead characters, who are two DEA agents, are making these real strides against Pablo Escobar and against the Medellin and Cali cartels. And just as they're going to make the big break, and these are all true stories, just as they're going to make the big arrest or start the big operation, they're foiled by the CIA station chief, because the station chief doesn't care about your DEA anti-drug operations. The CIA station chief cares about power and control of the government, control of the argument of information making its way back to the American people, and control over communist movements, which are, you know, to you and to me might be kind of romantic throwbacks to the 70s or the 80s, but are very much a part of the CIA's operating directive.
Criminal operation, really, is what it is. I mean,
sure,
the CIA,
sure.
So two-part questions.
You've got elements of the American government all working against each other. And at the end of the day, that means they're working against the American people.
That's right. That's absolutely right. So two-part question with just a couple minutes remaining here. What on earth is the FBI doing in embassies, number one? And number two, would you classify the CIA in its current form as a terrorist organization?
Both very good questions. Number one, what is the FBI doing in American embassies around the world? Yeah, you tell me. The original point of putting FBI agents, called legal attachés or legats, in American embassies around the world was to target Americans who were violating U.S. law while overseas. For example, money laundering or child pornography. Okay, that's great. I'm all for taking child pornographers off the streets. They should put them under the jail, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, just put a bullet in their brain, actually.
Yeah, exactly. But that's not really what the FBI is doing overseas. Now the FBI is running operations against American citizens. The FBI is in constant conflict with the CIA over who has primacy overseas. And then to get back at the FBI, the CIA challenges the FBI for primacy in the United States, which is illegal. So there's this, it's just a constant bureaucratic fight. And again, the American people are the losers here. The second part of your question was,
in its current form, is the CIA a terrorist organization?
Yes, a terrorist organization. You know, it breaks my heart, but I have to say yes. When the CIA was first established, its mission was very, very clear. It was to recruit spies, to steal secrets, and then to analyze those secrets to provide them to policymakers so that policymakers could make the best informed policy in the interests of the American people. That's what it was supposed to do. Now, it got out of hand. It was slapped down in 1975 by the Church Committee and the Pike Committee, and the House and Senate Oversight Committees were established. But then it got out of hand again after 9/11. And now the CIA doesn't even pretend to be a foreign intelligence agency recruiting spies to steal secrets. Now it is a paramilitary organization whose primary goal it is to go around the world and to kill people or to kidnap people and ignore U.S. law. You know, this is a mantra for me, Stu. Either we are a nation of laws governed by a constitution, or we're not. We can't be both at the same time. We can't pretend to be this shining beacon of hope for civil liberties and civil rights and the rule of law, and then have that apply only to some people some of the time. Yeah. The system is broken, and this is not a partisan issue.
That's an
this
understatement.
This is either an American issue or an un-American issue.
That's right. You know, the next president, who has any balls at all and actually cares for the American people should classify the CIA and the FBI both as terrorist organizations and then treat them accordingly. That has to happen, or we're not going to be a country.
I think you're right. I'm on record as saying that I believe, and I've believed for a very long time, that the CIA and the FBI should be scrapped. Certainly there are other redundant agencies around government that can do the important work that needs to be done. But the FBI and the CIA are out of control. They are targeting American citizens who are, in many cases, in my view, in most cases, exercising their constitutional rights to freedom of speech and to freedom of association and to freedom of press, and clamping down on them because they don't fit into that mainstream narrative. And that's just wrong.
Yeah, they're openly declaring war on American citizens, and they have run around, you know, the face of the planet as well as right here in the United States and set up operations to usher in full coups and full totalitarianism, authoritarian law, Marxism, whatever you want to call it. These are the people that are responsible for it. Your own fake government has become a corporate government crime syndicate. And they pay off the press to do it. They did it in Ukraine. They're doing it in Sudan. We've done this all over the place. What on God's green earth was the CIA doing in Wuhan, China, by the way, on January 4th of 2020? What the hell was going on in Wuhan, China on January 4th of 2020 that needed the CIA's attention? We all know exactly what's going on.
And let me add to that, too.
Final words.
Look at what's happening in Syria. You know, the CIA went so far off the reservation that it actually allied itself and began providing weapons, training, and ammunition to Al-Qaeda, the actual Al-Qaeda in Syria, just because we hate the internationally recognized government of Bashar al-Assad.
Yeah.
This is a criminal activity.
Not only that, but they hate you. They hate you. They hate Americans. They hate your children. They want to take them. They want to mutilate them. They want to castrate them. They want to turn them into nanosapiens. They want to put chips in their brain and control their thoughts and their memories and their actions. They want to implement predictive policing. All of this stuff is not science fiction. This is actually happening. Your government hates you. That's period. John Kiriakou, thank you for your bravery. Thank you so much for being here today as well. We appreciate it. God bless you.
Thanks for having me.
Here's some news for gun owners that you may not know. Millions of concealed carrying gun owners have made a huge mistake with their holster. Sadly, their holster is so uncomfortable that they just stopped using it altogether, meaning that their quest to defend themselves or others fails at the start. That's why Vanish Holsters is quickly becoming one of the most popular holsters in America. Thousands of customers say it's the most comfortable holster that they've ever used. And when you get one, you'll never stop carrying. This holster also saves you money. That's because it fits 99% of all semi-auto handguns, works without a tactical belt, lets you carry in multiple positions, and carries two fully loaded magazines. And best of all, is that because you are a supporter of this show, you can get it for $50 off. Just go to vnsh.com/stew, vnsh.com/stew, to see if your gun will work with one of these Vanish holsters and activate your discount today. Normally $130, you'll get a steal of a show for the Stu Peters Show supporters. Go to vnsh.com/stew today to claim your $50 discount on Vanish holsters.
You survived the first pandemic, but the elite have more planned.
We don't just need more money for vaccines for children. We need more money to plan for the second pandemic. There's going to be another pandemic. We have to think ahead.
The enemy is packing every shot with mRNA nanopoison, decimating immune systems, putting millions at risk of vaccine-induced genocide. Trust, the medicine that killed COVID. Real supplements that saved families. Dr. Zelenko saved millions with his patented early treatment protocol and now has the shield against hidden viruses. The Z-Stack protocol is your family's best chance at defeating the next bioweapon attack. Fortify your immune system today with the Z-Stack from our friend, Dr. Zelenko. A one-pill formula taken twice a day. Everything you need to fight back against bioweapons. ZStackProtocol.com. Stock up now. Be prepared. Stand ready. ZStackProtocol.com.
If you're among one of the viewers in our DirecTV or Dish Network viewing audience, chances are you did not see today's entire broadcast. We went way over time. Of course, the networks cut us short so they can pay the bills and run advertising. We're allowed 1 hour on DirecTV and Dish Network. Certainly not enough time. But fear not, it's always available at StuPeters.com in its entirety, as well as on our Rumble channel. Make sure that you go to StuPeters.com for all of the latest, plus all of the other broadcasts across our network. Uncensored with Maria Z, Shots Fired with Deanna Lorraine, The Richard Leonard Show, and a whole lot more. Don't forget about In the Trenches with Teddy Daniels. All of this can be found on the Stu Peters Network, always at StuPeters.com. We'll be back tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern. Until then, God bless you. I am-